Welcome to Jersey Guy Sports, your sports talk home for the Yankees, Giants, Rangers, and the Rutgers Scarlet Knights, and I'm your host, Don. Thanks for tuning in. Today, I'll be discussing the Yankees, whose hitting is really bad. Pitching has been pretty good. The announcers are meh, and some other odds and ends. And also, the New York Rangers faced off against the Islanders on Thursday night. So let's go ahead and get started. The New York Yankees. Where to start? So, Yankees won two games in Detroit recently without hitting a lick. Good pitching for the Yanks trumped their anemic hitting for two games. And then on Thursday, the Yankees' hitting was just an unmitigated disaster, starting with Aaron Hicks. And the Yanks were shut out yet again this year in what is becoming just a pathetic excuse for a baseball team hitting-wise. So let's talk about the Yanks hitting. Let's take us through a few people. We have Joey Gallo, who is just an ongoing disaster. At this point, you know, saying that is like saying the sky is blue, because Gallo is a known commodity that Cashman traded for five good prospects for. Just didn't trade for it. He traded five good prospects for this disaster of a hitter. That terrible trade continues to kill us. And the worst part is this, right? If Gallo actually managed to hit, say, 210, then he strikes out 50% of his at-bats and hits 30 homers. But he hits 210. He'll be praised left and right, lauded by Boone, written about by writers. They'll cite some non-important analytics number, you know, as the basis of this effusive praise they'll heap on him. But he is just a walking disaster. I don't care how nice Gallo is. I don't care how many homers Gallo hits. I don't care. He is the polar opposite of what this team needs in a hitter. We need more IKFs, right? And way less Gallos. Contact, speed. Contact a second time. And you know, a career batting average maybe slightly higher than Gallo's miserable 205 would benefit the team. Other people on the team, Hicks was actually hitting a little bit early on, which was good. But we all know where this is headed, and it's already headed that way, given that Hicks is a career 233 hitter. He has sucked balls the last couple of games, and he was a complete unmitigated disaster Thursday in Detroit. In the eighth inning, the Yanks were trailing 1-0. They had first and third with nobody out and ended up not scoring that inning. First one up was Hicks. First and third, nobody out. Yanks down 1-0. Hicks couldn't even hit a friggin' fly ball. He just popped up. He drives me friggin' insane. He went another game without a hit. He loafed after a ball earlier in the game that dropped in front of him. Then in the bottom of the eighth, with the Yanks still up 1-0, after not scoring that whole inning, he loafed what seemed like didn't get a good jump in the bottom of the eighth, and he just, the ball fell in front of him. The ball seemed like it was in the air for 90 seconds. I don't know how the hell he couldn't get to it. It dropped. The Tigers scored two more runs to seal the win. I don't want to hear it about Aaron Hicks. That is enough. You know, someone's going to say, oh, you know, the typical horseshit in the beginning there. He's in the best shape of his life. He's made a great adjustment to the plate. He holds the bat higher, blah, blah, blah. He'll be hitting 230 in 2 weeks, maybe less. Trust me, he's already starting to suck balls and get back to his normal batting average. IKF, Isaiah Connor Falefa, is now hitting. And he appears to be what we want to see at the plate in all aspects. He hits the ball the other way. He continues to make contact, which, you know, by itself is better than half the friggin' Yankee team. He also happens to run very well. And he's supposed to be a good infielder, too, and a good shortstop, but that's yet to be determined. We'll have to give him a little more time there. Gleyber Torres is in an 0-for-17 slump. He finally got an infield single on Thursday, but who whoop-de-doo, who friggin' cares? He's 0-for-17. He's not playing good defense. He almost blew an easy routine double play in Detroit in the second game by throwing well wide on a relay to first base with no pressure on either runner, right? There was nobody near him at second. The runner at first wasn't even running that hard going to first, and he almost threw it past first base. He's not doing well, and he just does not have a position on this New York Yankee team. DJ LeMahieu needs to play second base every night. This nine players into eight positions roulette horseshit is bad in every way for the Yanks, and it needs to come to an end. It also seems, in other news, that any remaining Yankees who were not vaccinated may have actually gotten vaccinated, according to some recent reporting. And hopefully that's the case. So I won't have to go into some other rant the first time the Yankees have to travel to Toronto without a few people. Hopefully they're all vaccinated now. Other odds and ends, the pitching of the Yankees remains very stout so far. I've spoken a lot about how I love Nestor Cortes in every way, in both his pitching prowess and his flair and his personality, which the entire Yankee team, by the way, flair and personality, is in desperate need of. It's amazing. Sometimes swagger, confidence, and flair make, you know, watching a boring-ass team watchable for fans, right? You know, if your team can't win, at least, you know, you can root for certain players. We need more personalities on this team, you know, not ones that just flip the bats while they're hitting 190 because they hit a friggin' homer. I mean, I can't stand those people. And that's not flair, by the way. That's just cocky, moronic assholeness. I mean people with real personality, like Cortes and some of the others. Now, as far as the good pitching, Cole is a glaring exception, right, to our good start for all of our pitchers. Garrett Cole entered Wednesday with the worst ERA in the American League, 6.35 ERA, the worst in the American League. His strikeout rate is the worst since 2017. And a day after his shortest outing of his career, right, when Cole had five walks, right? Boone, in his infinite wisdom, said he's not worried about the right-hander. You know, here is what the Yanks moron-in-chief, Boone, had to say about Cole's just atrocious start. Quote, I really am encouraged, Boone said. His fluff, his stuff, his breaking ball, his fastball profile. I mean, this is how Boone talks after what was just a disaster of an outing about Cole. You can't make this shit up. You can't. Boone is just, what is there to say about him? I am so, so tired of Boone. I'm so tired of his mealy-mouthed press conferences. I thought he showed good stuff. You know, he's having good swings. He's just about to break out. Another happy horseshit responses like that. Like, I've had it. Just his voice alone, Boone, is so grating on me. I can't even listen to his friggin' press conferences anymore. Never, not to mention his continued lefty-righty horseshit with pitchers and hitters, his rest day roulette, who's going to be sitting today, where the lineup changes every goddamn day. Why in God's name is Boone still here? Why? Just tell me why. As for Cole, the Yanks are screwed if Cole can't be the ace we need him to be, and frankly, the ace that we friggin' are paying Cole to be. They continue to make excuses for him, right? Oh, it was so cold in Detroit. You know, give me a break. Every other friggin' pitcher that pitched in Detroit had no problems except for Boone, so I don't want to hear it. Basically, after the sticky stuff crackdown, Cole has not been Garrett Cole. If he doesn't turn around, the Yanks are screwed. There's nothing else to really even say. The bullpen, even if it does turn out to be great, and I am not sold on that just yet, it's not sustainable to win games with five or six pitchers pitching every night. And it's just not. And if you don't know why, you're not paying attention. In close games, right, if just one reliever does poorly, then you can lose the game pretty easily. Just one, right? And obviously, the more people you put in a game to pitch, the more chances that one of them will suck and blow the game, right? And if you're only pitching two or three pitchers, you know, you probably have a decent chance that they can all pitch well. If you pitch five or six pitchers, you know, there's a decent chance at least one of the six is not going to be good, right? Because that's just what happens. It's just math, and it's just the way of dumb modern baseball to ignore it and have a revolving door of relievers come in all game, every game. Now, given this modern reality, I mean, it's good that the Yanks do seem to have a quality pen, at least. Again, that's how it seems for now, this podcaster continues to stress. If we must deal with, you know, moron-in-chief Boone and baseball's modern reality of using at least five pitchers per game, then at least it's good that we have a lot of decent-looking relievers. Again, so far, it's April, guys. Just take it easy. I would actually like, you know, to have an actual closer on the team, you know. Raise your hand if you're confident in Chapman right now. Anyone? So let me touch on a few more things. The Yankee announcers. There's a new Yes analyst, Cameron Maybin. and who seems like a pretty nice guy, for sure, but I'm definitely not in love at all with his analysis. I don't actually see much analysis happening at all, to be honest. And, you know, he mostly points out good things after they happen and adds things like, and that's what they like about Hicks, or other silliness, you know, in a game where he said that, and then later Hicks popped up with a runner on second, third, and one out. This is the Wednesday game, not the Thursday game that I was just railing on, where Hicks did it again. There was radio silence from Maben after that at bat, like literal silence until the next batter was batting. He didn't open his mouth. And that bothers me. You know, if you want to be a good analyst and commentator, you have to talk about things you think are good and things you think are bad. Now, Hicks, you know, he'll say something like, Hicks normally does the job there. And of course he doesn't, but maybe didn't even say that. Maben so far seems to consistently point out good things, right, about every Yankee, even if they're super rare, you know, as they come up. So as someone who never does anything does something, he'll say, oh, you know, that's why, blah, blah, blah. But he almost never says what needs to be said. And he doesn't provide much hard, objective analysis of players, I would say. And, you know, he's new and he's a nice guy and he's a former Yankee that knows all the players personally, right? So I understand if he doesn't want to say mean things about his friends and, you know, whatever, but that does not make him a good analyst, you know, whether or not he's a nice guy. We also have Michael Kay, you know, who provides analysis as an announcer for some reason. That's often wrong, in my opinion. He has a radio show, as many of you know, where, you know, he often subscribes to and quotes moronic analytics, horse shit, while at the same time sort of saying he doesn't really believe in it sometimes, but he just continues to use that to defend boom moves. Kay is wrong so much more often in his opinions than one should be for someone who's, you know, the play-by-play announcer, damn it, for the Yanks for 150 games a year, every year for what, 10, 20 years now. I feel like he can't see the team sometimes. I find myself kind of frequently at odds with his opinions and assumptions, you know, shit like, of course you should put the righty in to face this, you know, this lefty pitcher, which is often beyond stupid. You know, he says that as if there's no chance that you shouldn't follow lefty righty horseshit, you know, but then he'll get on his radio show and talk, you know, well, we can't always follow analytics. So he's like a mealy mouth. I don't agree with his opinion most times. In any case, you know, I'm not aligned with his opinions most of the time, but I do find him an exciting play-by-play guy with maybe some awful opinions. We have David Cone, right, also in the booth. And Mr. Cone is all about the analytics, which I cannot stand, as you probably have heard. So I immediately start to tune out whenever Cone starts spouting his happy horse shit stat, one stat after another. Oh, the spin rate this, the exit velo that, the blah, blah, blah. Oh, for the love of God. For me, most of the stats, you know what they are? They just provide names for things that we already know about baseball, right? For example, Cone and Michael Kay often seem shocked, you know, when they announce, well, when here's a really interesting stat, Michael, when the exit velo is over 95, you know, the chance of a hit goes from 35% to 57%. You know, Kay's like, wow, yeah, impressive. I mean, like, this is some historic revelation. So, like, you're saying when you hit the ball harder, you'll probably get more hits? Wow. I'm sure it took nine Einsteins to come up with that one. I mean, it's just putting names to things you already know and trying to sound smart. Maybe there's a few extra things we can glean from analytics, but most of the time it's over the top. There's others I won't list, but analytics are ruining baseball. What happens is these analytics, because there's so many of them, they drive bad in-game decisions. They also drive bad trades. Joey Gallo, anyone? And they're annoying as shit to see and hear during the game. Now, I like stats. And baseball, more than any other major league sport, is a game of stats. And it's always been. And that's not necessarily a bad thing. But there is a point past which interesting becomes friggin' annoying, right? And we have passed that point with analytics probably about 10 years ago. Mr. Cone, are you listening to me? Paul O'Neill. I love O'Neill. I mean, I don't have much to say about him except he is fun. He's funny. He provides some interesting insight into the game. I love having him on. I enjoy his stories. I enjoy him when he busts on Cone and Michael Kay's big head. He provides good analysis and insight for the most part. You know, he doesn't have biting analysis like some of the ones. He's also friends with some of the folks around, but he does at least provide some more slightly objective analysis than any of the other folks. And he's just fun to be around. And he really provides a good, I think, atmosphere when he's on. I always look forward to when Paul O'Neill's there. And lastly, Meredith Marakovich, right? She's, in my opinion, the best sideline reporter in the game. She's likable. She's fun. She always has news and answers. And she broadcasts from everywhere. I remember a couple of years ago, she was sitting in the bay in a kayak in San Francisco out beyond right field years ago with microphone talking about. She is flat out everywhere. She's been on bridges in Pittsburgh, up in the upper deck, and she's all over the place. And she always knows her stuff, and she's pleasant, and she's fun. So she's pretty great. That's about it for the Yanks. I think lastly, would it kill us to see Volpe playing the majors this year, right? This prospect who we keep hearing about? I'd like to see him. Anyway, I think that's about it for me ranting on the Yanks. We'll be talking about them some more as the season goes on. And we'll go ahead and talk a little bit about the Rangers Islanders. So on to some good news. The Rangers beat the Islanders Thursday night on the road, 6-3. It was a really strong effort on the road by the Rangers against what is a really good Islander team. Despite their average record, the Islanders are a very strong team who got off to a bad start, had some COVID issues, a bunch of road games early. They are a good team who's already beat the Rangers twice this year, by the way, but the Rangers stomped them, and it wasn't much of a contest, honestly. The game ended up featuring 4 assists from Panarin, 4 more friggin' assists from Artemi Panarin, a natural hat trick from Kopp, another power play goal from Kreider, and another win by Georgiev. Pretty cool. Kaapo Kakko remained out, though, unfortunately, on a sadder note. Hopefully not for too much longer, though. Gallant thinks he's going to be back before the playoffs, so we can only hope that to be true. Georgiev had 6 straight wins in his previous 6 starts for the Rangers, and he was in goal. And while Georgiev has been really strong lately, was kind of curious the decision by Gallant, at least in my opinion, to start Georgiev since Igor had his best game in probably 2 months the other night. But Georgiev made some good early saves, and the early decision seemed to stand up. Andrew Kopp opened the scoring for the Rangers, burying a one-timer off a great backhand pass from Panarin early in the first, but the Rangers up 1-0. Varlamov, who is the Islanders' backup goaltender, must have been stunned with the Rangers scoring a goal 2 minutes into the contest, because Varlamov absolutely owns the friggin' Rangers over the last couple of years. We cannot beat this friggin' guy. He's their backup goaltender, and we cannot beat him. But No problem on Thursday night. Then Kopp did it again, scoring again on a feed from Panarin to put the Rangers up 2-0 just 7 minutes into the first period. Kopp has fit like a glove on the second line with Panarin and Strome ever since he came over on the trading deadline from Winnipeg. What a great pickup, and he has been money for the Rangers. Good offensively, good defensively. He can win faceoffs amazingly. When he plays center, he can play on the wing. He's a great pickup. And then after some back and forth, Kopp buried his 3rd goal of the period for a natural hat trick to put the Rangers up 3-0 with 2 minutes left in the first period. And by the way, Panarin had his 3rd assist of the night and of the first period, of course. The first period ended with the Rangers up by that 3-0 score. And at that point, the Rangers had gone 10 consecutive periods without even allowing a goal. So they had 3 straight games in a period without giving up a goal, something like 200 plus minutes or something straight. Very impressive. But that didn't last very long after the first period. It ended less than a minute into the second period on what was kind of a casual, lazy defensive effort by the Rangers as a team, and the Islanders put one in there. The rest of the second period was kind of even, and the Islanders were playing much better and tougher in the first. The Rangers did answer back with a power play goal. Late in the second, Kreider was scored. She had another power play goal to put the Rangers up 4-1. Chris Kreider this year, man, a goal scoring machine and a power play goal scoring machine. Unbelievable. 26th power play goal, 51st goal of the year. Chris Kreider, man, who is this man? The Rangers were then flying around again after that, and Strome added another goal off the fourth assist of the night from Panarin. So Strome buried that one to put the Rangers up 5-1 after two periods. The Islanders scored a power play goal and to make it 5-2 early in the third, although they never really threatened. The game then loosened up a little bit after that, and the Rangers added a goal on a 3-on-1. Ryan Reeves scored from a very nice Lafreniere pass, put the Rangers up 6-2, and then the Islanders answered right back a minute later to make it 6-3. By that point, it was only 6 minutes left in the game, and that's how the game finished, 6-3 Rangers. The Rangers, just real quickly, are firing on all cylinders right now as they gear up for the playoffs. I believe they have 4 games left. They have clinched with this win home ice in the playoffs for the first round. They remain tied for first place in the Metropolitan Division now with Carolina, which is no small feat as Carolina is an absolutely elite team who I don't want to play. But the Rangers remain tied with Carolina right now, although, again, Carolina holds all the tiebreakers. And the Rangers play Carolina Tuesday evening. That should be interesting. The Rangers have now won 4 straight overall, and Georgiev has now won each of his last 7 starts, if you can believe that. He was a guy I did not want on this team 2 or 3 months ago, and he has now won 7 straight starts. The Rangers next play Saturday afternoon in Boston, which should be a very good one. Let's go, Rangers. Thank you for listening to Jersey Guy Sports, and please subscribe to the podcast and tell your friends all about it, and give it a like if you like it. I'll be back soon with some more sports talk. Thanks, and have a good day.